We're on. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger. And Mojo Radio, of course, says that whatever content we put up is they're not responsible for. And here we are, Sleeper. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger. We are back. Change your name. Get your aliases ready. We're going in, Sleeper.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up the fact that I was at the Montreal-Toronto game last night watching the hockey game. It's the advantage of being in the entertainment business because I got some really nice seats. There I am. Very close to the players, enjoying the action, watching the dichotomy of the crowd, having Montreal fans and Toronto fans at the same time, which is a strange crowd to be in. I'm really hypnotized by the entire process. Really sucked in. I was, you know, born and raised in Canada, so hockey becomes a very big influence.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be a part of Cloak and Dagger. I run the webpage, very media aware, not allowing these types of really strong media presences to affect me. I should be able to let the audience effect bounce off of me. But it's powerful. While I was in there, I didn't think about Bob. I didn't think about you. Didn't think about the show. Didn't think about saving the world. I didn't think about people dying in Africa. It all got forgotten. It's so powerful.
Were you fooled this week? Let's get down to the point. I wasn't fooled. I know Sherman and Bob weren't fooled.
For those,
Alex wouldn't have been fooled, but they tried to fool us big time. Big Brother tried to fool us this week, Sleeper.
Well, we should ask our guests if they were, because I was for those 3 hours. And I guess a question, if I want to throw it at you from a philosophical point of view, how much more powerful can it get?
Well, I want to pick up Big Brother. I want to pick up from my promo that I did on Thursday that's been running. Big Brother had his military 9/11. What is he going to carry out next? It's very Orwellian with Big Brother and the two-minute hate every time the president comes on. But fresh dupes, Big Brother's mass media disconnects the dots in our world. And tonight we're going to put the patterns back into the invisible, right, Sleeper? And we're a live internet and radio show, and you're manning the internet, correct?
Well, Lenny,
and we're, as Dobbs says, we're inside the audience and they're inside us.
I'm aware of that because I put your promo up. I didn't think about that or anything that was in it while I was at the hockey game. This can't be ignored. I was completely hypnotized.
Hypnotized.
Everyone's being hypnotized on all levels by all media every day, all the time. So they come to the show and they're shocked by anything we have to say because it doesn't fit into their weekly experience living inside a media maelstrom.
Well, we're going to unhypnotize them tonight because we've got, of course, coming on our regular prime guest, as people can see at mojoradio.com. Click on the Cloak and Dagger link. You'll be able to see that we've got our prime guest coming up.
Bob Dobbs is the smartest man on the planet.
Yeah, and of course we're going to have a do-re-mi tonight with Alex Jones, a quickie picking up from last week. We had to cut him off last week, so we're going to pick him up this week. And then we're going right into Jeff Steinberg, counterintelligence editor of the EIR. And then we're also going to move to Mike Rupert. And Mike has a lot of stuff. He's been working on a book, and he's doing us a great favor of coming out tonight and giving us his percept on what's really going up there, out there, and adding patterns to the invisible.
Super. You can't expect the same type of questions either. Same way I want this question addressed, how much more powerful can the media get than a Montreal-Toronto hockey game?
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to drill that.
Well, like the Leafs, we're going to experience a series of jolting, prearranged disappointments down the long lane of generations.
Yeah, so there's the classic Toronto pessimist.
So let's bring everybody in, Bob Dobbs and Alex Jones. Are you there, gentlemen?
Absolutely. Great to be back on the show.
Welcome, Alex. How are you, Bob?
Excellent.
Good to have you guys in. Bob Dobbs from Manhattan, our regular prime guest, our Pentad manager, our intelligence expert, mantle media guru, and Alex Jones. Alex, let's pick it up from last week. Sorry we had to cut you off. Why don't you theme us in on what's the middle C chord in your world?
Well, I mean, frankly, the most important thing I've seen since last week was the report put out by the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the big management teams for the globalists here in North America, with former presidents and current governors and senators and media moguls and bank owners and managers there in control. They put out a new report right before September 11th last year. They put out a report saying, basically, give up all your rights and the bad men won't attack you. Well, now Gary Hart and Warren Redmond, it's bipartisan tyranny, came out, these two former senators, and said in a 40-page report that's on Infowars.com in Tuesday's archive, just go to the bottom of the page and click on Tuesday and go read this, link through the CFR and read this report, America's Still Unprepared, America's Still in Danger report on the independent task force sponsored by the Council on Foreign Relations. And this is one of the most powerful organizations in the world. They're managing Homeland Security. They've written the plan for Homeland Security and the Patriot Act. They're steering things. They're in command. And they say in the report, we want you to do five things, or on page 31 it says 80+%. 80% or higher is the exact words, of you will die in major cities. If you do everything we say now, only 20% of you will die. This is staggering War of the Worlds type announcements, but it's real. And you said, what are they planning next? We know the globalists carried out September 11th. I've had to make two films and write a book to just cover part of the evidence.
Yes.
There's so much evidence. They're just counting on us not being able to accept the horror and go look at the facts in this fragmented world of endless, you know, phony media images continually programming us.
Well, that's right. We have up on our website under our news section, Alex, if you go to mojoradio.com, click on the Cloak and Dagger link on the right-hand side of the screen, we have in the news, Gore Vidal claims Bush junta complicit in 9/11, and it's really breaking out all over what you and what we've been saying all along.
Well, in fact, I said it July 25th, 2001, months before the attack. I put it in the films. I did it on my syndicated radio show. And people say, well, how did you know that? Well, David Shippers knew, and Larry Klayman had heard, and then these FBI people and detectives I was out there talking to. Everybody knew a massive attack on New York was coming. In fact, MSNBC went and did an investigation to, quote, disprove the urban myth that there had not been warning to the locals, and it turned out it was absolutely true. But then they spun it and said, well, we don't know how this happened. Look, bottom line, though, that's history. We had the bullet inside the casing with the cap being hit on September 11th and the round exploding down the barrel. Now the bullet, the projectile's left the barrel. It's going towards our collective heads because the globalists are losing control and are trying to do more and more violent things to scare us back into submission. And that's where I was agreeing totally with Bob Dobbs last week. My only concern about the situation is that they're now building a cashless society. With the internet, with the alternative media, we can take control of the paradigm, all of us collectively together with our own ideas and simply pointing out the matrix of lies and propaganda. Here's the problem. They're now coming out with the call
of
money.
Alex, let me just interrupt you. We'll do another quick segment with you. We do have to go to break. But when we come back, we'll continue with what with your segment.
Do you?
Okay, we're back, Cloak and Dagger. We've got so much going on in the news between the Gore Vidal claiming that Bush junta is complicit in 9/11, and we had the Senator Wellstone was assassinated. We had another airplane sabotage, and I know I was talking to Sherman this week, and of course he's up to date on that, and he'll be back next week with a quick report on that. If we can get him on late tonight, that'd be great. But John Allen Williams, Muhammad is a cutout patsy. I mean, there was Maggie Drawers in that thing too, Alex.
Absolutely, and the biggest thing I'm concerned about is the CFR report that they put out a week ago, the new report, saying that they're going to kill millions of us and that they're going to save us. And they say, but if you give the CFR, private corporations, control over the government, give them national security clearances, if we can have mandatory voluntarism, it was five things, then only 20% of us will die. This is pure fascism. So they've socialized the wealth in these big government states. Now they're transferring the government wealth into the hands of the private corporations that paid to put the politicians in there in the first place. So really, socialism is just a road to fascism, not to communism. All of this is a centralization of the power, and then you add to this the colored money with the strips coming out next year here in the U.S., the World Bank admitting that it's behind imploding economies to consolidate. They don't care what we believe in the future. They're going to control us through tangible resources, and that that's where they're going to try to get do an end run around what Bob Dobbs eloquently talks about when he says that they're losing control of this media. The problem is they're expanding control of tangible things like food and transportation, and they're going to tax the living daylights out of us.
Alex, we have to run on and keep going, but thanks a lot for that. A quick prediction, if you will, before we go on to Jeff Steinberg, a quick prediction for the upcoming week or weeks. What's going to happen in this election?
Well, again,
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter because it's all the same people, but more terror, more crises, more media reports about the government with the nice men in the black uniforms are here to save us. And everybody out there, we've got to resist this thing. Check out InfoWars.com.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Take care.
See you.
Thank you, Alex.
Okay, according to Alex, we're going to experience a series of prearranged disappointments down the long lane of generations. And Bob, why don't you take over here and let's have a wrap-up of the Alex Jones office, which is your expertise, while we get Jeff on the phone. You there, Bob? No, we got to disconnect Jones. Well, we haven't got Bob on. Sleeper,
I was going to say this. He brought up a great thing about 80% of the people dying in cities, but the kicker is the 20% who are going to live is what the audience assumes they are a part of. And Alex is actually taking some very great avenues with InfoWars.com and his videos to try to wake those people up that you ain't a part of that 20%. You're going down too, buddy, like he said on that one show. Wake up, buddy. You're
exactly.
Under attack.
You're under attack.
People have to realize that. You can't feel comfy and cozy because we're in North America or we're a part of an elite sect of the world living in a high life with all these comforts. You're a part of that operation, and you're going to go down too if you don't figure it out and take some action.
Bob, are you in there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, Randy, first, in relation to what Sleeper was saying about the hypnotism, he's hypnotized by one thing, and then he sees other media attempting to capture his attention. Well, I got a pattern here. It's finally clarified so that we can ease our nagging need to know what's going on in this particular area, this area being the upcoming Iraqi war, the invasion of Iraq. I now can say definitely what's going to happen. It will happen in the warmer months next summer when people least expect it. It's not going to happen for at least 6 months, but 6 months from now it gets into May, June, July, and the war will only last 3.5 weeks. So that's what's going to happen with the war, and devastating to a lot of people as they expect. It'll be probably devastating to a lot of Iraqis. That's another matter, but just for the general timetable, that's what is going to happen. So Sleeper doesn't have to worry about when the war is going to happen. He can concentrate on other media dynamics, and for example, what he just worried about with Alex.
Well, we've got two calls here. We've got Ad Absurdum and John, and we want you guys just to hang on. We'll get to you in a minute. Bob, what did you think about, what about this idea about the whole return to ancestral tribal lands, America returning to the banks of the Euphrates and west thereof?
Well, that you mean the alphabet is returning.
Yes.
That's where writing came from. That's where these left hemisphere, visually biased, literate tribes came from. And they want to go back to the sources of the beginning of writing, and especially with the tradition of the phonetic alphabet that came through the Hebraic tradition and then the Greek tradition. That's what America is. That's what it represents.
What is satisfied by returning?
I think nothing's satisfied, but it's the only thing that people do. When everything disappears, they look for their origins, their roots, their original identity, because their present identity has been scrapped. So we're going back to where we think it all began, where reality went. Where reality began. That's the meaning of Israel. Israel. The Israel reality, or the Israel meme, comes out of the effect of writing, which led to a left hemisphere bias, which wanted a monotheistic, a mono pattern, a concentrated locality in one place, and that wasn't the case before writing, and it's not the case now.
Okay, hang on there, John from Mississauga. We're going to get an Ad Absurdum from Oakville. Bob, who's got a question for you. Go ahead, Ad Absurdum.
Hello there. Hello, Bob.
Go ahead.
The last week I called and we were talking about speech being first machine, the first technology, the first medium, and then you were talking about how it was retrieved by the electric media, and you also talk about how that's, I guess, the basic plot of Finnegan's Wake, and that's what happens in the book. But Finnegan's Wake also seems to show, to me anyway, that speech nowadays, at least, can really mimic, mime, or model or accommodate any of the pre-existing media that have happened since speech was the first media, and that it can accommodate and play with and put on any of the different sensory biases, like the visual or the tactile that you're just talking about, the left brain, the right brain. And you also said once that you were the tactile mirror, and I was wondering if you could maybe illuminate for us some of the different modes of speech or biases of speech that we find here on Cloak and Dagger, and what is the difference between Bob Dobb's speech and Alex Jones' speech, or Sherman Skolnick's speech, or the audio poetry opening up the show speech.
Okay, great patterning there, Ed. Observe them. The thing is, yes, you're right. When I say that the speech was the original medium, most people think of what's coming out of the mouth. Now, that's a concentration that began with writing, the idea that speech was just in the mouth. In the first stages, it was oral. And then we moved into the writing, the visual bias, but speech dominated. We definitely have gone past speech and retrieved the pre-speech stuff. I didn't go into that just to help the caller last week understand some basic points.
Bob, why don't you refer them to a website for
that? No, I don't need to. Let me just explain it.
Okay.
So the tactile is before speech, which we consider oral, and we've moved into a post-oral, that's why it's not true we're in an oral culture now.
Okay.
But anybody who puts on the oral meme is a poet like Ginsberg. They do rants, and then you get rapped. The orality has to be a rapping kinetic thing, but it's operating inside a tactile situation, which is ESP, proprioceptive, way past what the mouth emphasizes. Now, when I communicate, I'm...
Oh, Bob, these are big words. What's that mean, proprioceptive? What's that?
Proprioceptive is one of your senses. It's the inner sense that determines where you are. It's kind of like a balancing sense. And mimes use it when they do mime. So the Internet was an extension of the proprioceptive mime sense.
It's the mime. Internet was?
Yes, because you're inside a tactile, but it is also indicating movement, like taking a drug and moving through neuron circuits. And
what's it got to do with spine, though? Can you relate it to spine?
Spies were made obsolete by the proprioceptive tactile mirror, and therefore the real action of control was just letting other people sail through old media like speech, writing, movies, TV, and the proprioceptive.
Ed Asunam, have you got this? Are you getting this down?
I thought that was beautiful, but I gotta hear what he was starting to say when he said, when I speak.
Right. When I speak, I'm not just using words. I'm setting out a communication because my mind is resonating inside this, this sphere, this tactile node. Then what I'm thinking right now to you and other listeners is being picked up by you. And what I'm thinking and doesn't come through in the words is more powerful than the words. But because I'm pretty good at this, my words are pretty well resonating with what I think, so I have an extra impact.
Okay, Ed Asunam, thanks for your call, Bob. I think we'll move on. That was
excellent.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot. All right, let's move on. We got Sydney from Toronto, and then we're going to get to John. But Sydney's got one about Israel, one who struggles with God. Let's hear what she's got to say. Sydney, are you there?
Yeah, I'm a
poet.
Welcome
again.
Thank you. I am a poet for years, and I teach and I write. And I was just going to add a little comment here that Israel, El is a Sumerian word meaning God. Israel is someone who struggles with God. And the roots, our roots are not in Israel. The roots of language, pictographs, language, writing, come from Sumer. And there's a very good set of volumes out on that by Zechariah Sitchin and many other scientists, and they all agree on that, that our roots go back to Sumer. So if I were to go anywhere, I would prefer to go back to Sumer. In other words, I know it's Iraq, and in the old days, people like Max Malawan, the archaeologist, would go there, and his wife was Agatha Christie. She wrote novels there. It was a beautiful place. Archaeologists found wonderful things there, but now it's been reduced to rubble, and this is the cradle of civilization. Iraq was Sumer, yes. And
I would like to see
peace in Iraq and the people, whoever left over from the plutonium and all the rest of it. I would like to see, I know what's going to happen, but I wish it wouldn't, because that is the cradle of civilization, and it's going to turn out, if Bush has his way, to be the coffin of civilization.
But that's civilization being writing.
Now, what
no, I don't mean just writing. Writing is just a symptom of civilization. A symptom of civilization.
No, I think civilization is held together by writing. The societies before civilization are not civilized, but they aren't inferior. They're just totally different. And we're in that situation.
That's exactly right. Well, civilization to me means man's humanity to man. Man learning to be humane with man is civilization. I don't care what the technology is. If the ethics aren't there, you don't have a civilization. Sorry.
No,
so
I think you've got a problem there. I think the ethics...
I don't think so, no.
So well,
what's
you
your,
don't.
What's
but,
your
but,
prediction then,
Sydney? Try to find out, try to learn something new.
If you want
to learn something new.
Yeah, Bob, hold on. Let's let her give our give a prediction.
I am familiar with Marshall McLuhan. I have most of his books. I did go to the university when he was there. I just didn't agree with everything that he said, but he was a wonderful man.
But he wasn't
and,
looking
and
for agreement.
I do learn a lot of new things, but it doesn't mean that I can't have a dialogue with you.
Right.
And all I'm saying is that civilization means not just writing and technology. It means responsibility socially. It means realizing that humanity is one group, and we should start learning that, cooperating, instead of this greed for oil and murder that's glossed over with, you know, it's horrible what's happening now. We are devolving. We are not evolving. Our ethics do not match our technology. It's like giving monkeys machine guns. Sorry, I know the facts. I know too many facts, okay? And I would love to go out into the lawnmower man kind of world and just be out there, you know, in the ether and the electronics. But unfortunately, I'm a human being. And you know that story, that film On the Beach by Neville Shute? Remember when they went thousands of miles thinking there was a message coming to them, some Morse code, this tapping? Because there was no one left alive. And when they got there, it turned out to be a Coke bottle banging on one of these telegraph modes, a Coke bottle. And you know what? If we don't do something about our ethics, all the electronic and the internet and all that is going to be just about as important as that Coke bottle when we're gone.
Let's okay, Robin, we got to move on. Sydney, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Next time, you got a question for Bob?
No, not really.
Thanks.
Well, I'm yet to hear Bob and Sydney disagree, and I don't know why she doesn't see that. Let's hear Bob reply directly to.
Yeah, Bob, what's your answer to that?
Well, I think the idea of ethics is determined by different cultures. And the thing is, she thinks I'm all for the Matrix. I'm not for the Matrix. I think the Matrix has disappeared. It's not, that's not even here now. We're dealing with the walking giants. The bodies have been retrieved by certain committees like Bush and them that they represent, and they're walking around us. They're trying to keep us trapped in the Matrix.
Okay, we're back on. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger. We're going behind the scenes. You've got to change your name, get your alias, and get ready to go inside. And now we're with, and we're going inside with one of the experts and L.A. Police Department detective, and just this guy's an all-round, dot the I's, cross the T's. When he's on the phone, you know you're right in tune with what's going on. Mike, are you there?
I hope so.
Well, welcome, Mike, and thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys are having some pretty interesting dialogue going on there.
Well, we're sure you're going to add to it. What's up? We haven't had you on in a few weeks. Theme us in on what's going on in the Middle Sea court of your world.
Well, we are just on the brink within weeks of some huge changes in the world and in civilization, like you guys were talking about. The Bush war plans for Iraq, which we know now due to some stories which revealed that they had a war plan to invade Iraq about 2 years ago, and it was on the agenda. But we've had troops forward deployed in the region now for since July. We have a great quote from Richard Perle that said that you can't start the debate too long before the war. And clearly that's happened. The political and economic moves in the UN, the very widespread protests around the world and here in the States, and some resistance from the Democratic side of Congress have slowed the war plans down. This invasion was planned to have occurred in September. There's no question in my mind about it. We have seen a rash of attacks on U.S. military personnel from Kuwait. We've seen other attacks like in Bali and elsewhere that indicate that the longer the Bush administration delays in the invasion of Iraq, the more these attacks there are going to be. And not to mention the fact that with troops deployed now, and I think about 10 countries, we have troops actually in Iraq near Mosul. We have special forces there. We have troops in Qatar, in Dubai, Saudi Arabia, in the British have troops in Oman, Djibouti, Yemen, Jordan, actually, Turkey, deployed all around the region. These troops now, instead of being offensive weapons ready to be used, have become defensive liabilities, and that's been causing the Department of Defense some problems. So in context with all of that, there is still no question in anybody's mind the invasion is going to occur. It's now just a matter of when. We're probably going to see it in the middle of this month. But President Bush had made it very clear that one of the things he wants before he starts the invasion is homeland security. And, of course, the very convenient death of Senator Paul Wellstone, which I believe was a murder, is going to make this lame duck session, which is coming up that starts after the election next Tuesday, probably just a very short period of time in which President Bush, by whatever means necessary, is going to get all of his measures passed, judicial appointments, and he will basically at that point have succeeded in creating and locking up his empire.
Well, Mike, we've got stories on the internet here about a lot of ammunition being sent to Iraq, and that the tanks and the Norfolk Southern and the railways are all busy as anything moving equipment to the coast and onto ships. So there's a lot of armaments being moved out there, and the more and more you stack these things up, the more pressure there is to move ahead. How's Bush putting up with this pressure?
Well, it's not just pressure. I mean, it is a commitment. You have to. If you you can't disrupt the military that far and not employ it. Scott Ritter made that very clear as long ago as 2.5-3 months ago when he came back after the 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force had been sent into the region.
Right. For our listeners, Scott Ritter is the UN weapons inspector who said that there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Okay, let me throw something in. Mike, what do you have to make you think that Wellstone was murdered?
Well, we have a story for our subscribers up on the website at fromthewilderness.com, and it's a very detailed story. First of all, let's just look at the history for a moment. I've done a statistical analysis going back to the mid-1970s, and you are twice as likely to be killed in a plane crash if you are a Democrat as if you are a Republican. That's pretty interesting. Actually, it's 64% if you include all the people that were not in Congress.
The Democrats don't employ any airplane sabotage in their bag of tricks in the hardball game of politics?
Apparently not. Well, I don't know. Ron Brown might have been
yes.
One of those guys.
Yes.
But
so there's the pattern, Mike. So how do you apply it to Wellstone, though? What details?
Let me just run you through a couple of things historically. First, we had the crash of Mel Carnahan 2 years ago in almost exactly the same circumstances, an extremely close senatorial race just days before the election, and a plane crash under questionable circumstances. Now, in Wellstone's case, there's some major anomalies here. I surveyed probably 60 of the world's major publications all around the globe. And CNN and AP especially immediately put out the spin, the attitude that the crash was caused because the plane was flying in snowy, freezing rain, implying that the crash was caused by icing. That is not true. Weather was absolutely 100% certainly not a factor in this air crash. But the reason why we know that is local press stories have made it very clear the two planes landed right before Wellstone's plane the same day. There was light, very light icing conditions between 9 and 11,000 feet. We know that Wellstone's plane had flicked on the runway lights by remote control, which is what you do at unmanned airports, that the aircraft had descended below the icing altitudes, and the last radio contact with FAA air traffic controllers was at about 2 miles out when the plane was at about 3,000 to 4,000 feet, well below the icing conditions. Not only that, about 20 minutes, 15 minutes or so after Wellstone's plane should have landed, the airport manager said, gee, that's funny, they clicked on the runway lights, I wonder where they are. And he went out and got in his own plane, and he was the first to see the crash site. Now, if there were icing conditions, the aircraft manager could not have taken off or would not have taken off. So the weather was absolutely clearly not a factor. There was one TV reporter who went on with Wolf Blitzer at CNN right after the crash. And Blitzer actually argued with her. She said weather was not a factor in this crash. And Blitzer says, well, they were flying into freezing rain, right? She says, no, weather was absolutely not a factor in this crash, and there was an immediate cutaway, and you never heard from that before.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be going to the top of the hour with Mike Rupert, and if you have any questions for him, call in at 416-870-6400. Stay on the line, Mike. We're going to come back to you. As a pilot, I know that they've told us that there's 5 miles visibility. I used to land the planes when there was 300 feet ceiling and 1 mile visibility. Quite frankly, I don't think there's any doubt from my study of what's going on as a pilot that Wellstone was assassinated by a high-tech sabotage. We've got a story about Senator Wellstone assassinated by a group linked to Bush Sr. on our website. And this is nothing new. We've seen this for so many years, this high-tech airplane sabotage from Ron Brown to the Nimrod here at the CNE. JFK Jr. was assassinated by high-tech sabotage. Mike, why don't you just take us to the top of the hour and theme us in on the highbrow stuff and the high-tech stuff. What's next? What do you see? Where are we going in the next few weeks?
Well, since you're a pilot, let's take just a minute to talk further about the crash, because
sure.
I come up with some very interesting things. First of all, we know that icing was not a factor. The King Air 100 was equipped with de-icing boots. It was a first-rate airplane, no problem whatsoever. This was a small unmanned airfield with an ILS landing system that was, now there's two kinds from my understanding. One is a simple one that just activates a beacon, a directional beacon, that aligns you with the runway. And there is a more sophisticated one that will give you glide path, rate of descent, so on and so forth. Well, this was the simple one that's activated by 7 clicks of the mic button at a certain frequency, which could be used, of course, to trigger either a sabotage device inside the aircraft. But what we find out from local press reports is that the directional beacon for the runway, this was a straight east-west approach, east to west, was, quote, slightly miscalibrated, and this was according to Carol Carmody, the head of the National Transportation Safety Board, mm-hmm. who flew out to the site. She used to work for the Central Intelligence Agency, and she also investigated Mel Carnahan's crash.
This is what they did with Ron Brown and why the head of the navigation equipment committed suicide a few days after the Ron Brown assassination. Go ahead.
I mean, you can literally, in bad weather, fly somebody right into a mountainside.
Exactly.
Now, ceiling here was 700 feet, visibility 3 miles. The terrain on the approach to the airport is flat swamp with trees in it, but there's no major hills or obstructions anywhere around the east to west approach. But what we find is that local press reports and a couple of FAA statements say that several miles out, somewhere in between 2 to 4 miles out, and maybe I can just ask you a question here in a second, that the plane veered off course. Instead of flying directly due west at a heading of 270, it started flying in a southwesterly direction and veered off course. Now, you would have started descent, of course, well above your ceiling level. You would have come out of the clouds at 700 feet, and then you would have or might have seen that you were off course at that point in time. But the flaps were only set at 15 degrees. Now, the last radio contact was 2 miles out, and the location, it took us some time, but I finally found witnesses on the ground, and we used GPS, and we even corrected the GPS with eyewitness statements. Places the location of the crash 2.1 miles from the east end of the runway, the outer marker, where the number 27 is on the runway, 2.1 miles,
right,
and 1.13 miles due south of the center line. The plane was oriented heading due south, at almost at a 180 compass heading. Now, the plane had been flying southwest, so my feeling is maybe it just did a wing over and went straight into the ground. But the flaps were only set at 15 degrees, which is not a landing setting for flaps.
Well, also there's reports of a flash being seen in the sky around the tail. But it's very easy to create an airplane sabotage condition, as we've seen, and it's been proven in the past, by monkeying around with the glide slope and the localizer, which are the two main components of the instrument landing system, which you call ILS.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very easily done. It was done to get to Ron Brown in Yugoslavia, and it's been done before, and it was done in this case as well.
So there are tons of anomalies here, and I'm taking the same approach because it's very difficult to find out exactly what happened. I've been kind of suspecting an EMP weapon on the ground because the crash site, believe it or not, is only 30 meters away from a state highway. That's not what we were told on the news.
Well, the original, when I searched the airport pilot database, I found that there was 5 miles visibility, and what happens is, you know, Wolf Blitzer and the CNN, the Distraction News Network, and they've been, you know, the snipers and the Haitians have been the great distractions the last 2 weeks, which we haven't been fooled with. But basically, you know, this thing is basically so obvious as to what was going on here.
Mm-hmm.
If you've studied airplane sabotage, and we talked about it last week with Sherman Skolnick, you can see that this is exactly fits in with the pattern of a high-tech airplane sabotage, which is not too difficult. People seem to think, you know, that because they're using high-tech equipment that it's fictitious. But this is not difficult, as pilots know. And we've asked many pilots to call in. I had a lot of pilots call me this week. They don't want to go on the air. They don't want to talk about what they know.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, there's so many people out there who know these things, but just don't want to go on the air, don't want to talk, but know that what we're saying is true.
They have no ethics. Well, you know, this is a climate of
what's
very...
What's that, Bob?
Fear. They have no ethics.
Well, what do you mean, ethics? They've got wife and kids. They don't want to be bothered.
Right. This is where Sydney's being too simplistic. When my neighbor, who I'm nice to, goes off and works for a radio station and is blasting their local radio station with ads, is that ethical activity? Is it ethical for me to interrupt them? Just a sidetrack. Let's go back to Mike. Okay. Quick question, Nelson. At about 2 miles out on approach in a King Air 100, would you have your flaps at 15 degrees or would you have them at a full 35 degrees for landing at just 2 miles out?
For 15 degrees would be in the holding in your rate one turn in your procedure, and then you would throw your flaps, full flaps down, your landing flaps down by the outer marker.
Okay.
So 15 degrees would mean he hadn't yet intersected the glide path at the outer marker. At the outer marker, you'd throw down your gear and your flaps.
Now the outer marker is not the outer marker of the runway. That's an outer marker on
That's the outer marker where the NDB, the non-directional beacon, is located, which is part of the ADF system.
Okay.
You use both the ILS and the ADF in order to make a precision approach.
Okay, well, he had activated that, so he should have been in full flap mode. Yet at the crash site, they said that the flap setting was only 15 degrees.
That's right, and the thing is, as a pilot, if you're doing all the work you're supposed to be doing and following all your checklists, if they've monkeyed around with the signal on the ground, which is what they did with Ron Brown, then what would happen is you could easily just fly yourself right into a mountain or the ground because you're dealing with the instruments. You're not looking out at all of the airplane. You're using the instruments to tell you where you are, and if they've monkeyed with the instruments, then that you could they can just take control and you can just fly right into anything.
There we go. I have a question for Mike. I understand you're writing a book. Is that true?
It's true. I'm working on it like crazy.
Well, what would the book be about, can you say?
Well, the title of the book is called Across the Rubicon.
Oh, wow. That's a great title.
America's Descent into Fascism at the End of the Age of Oil. And it is, if you will, the map upon which not only 9/11...
Well, we have a call. Mike, we have a call from Dan who's talking, wants to talk about these sabotages. Let's just get to him and let's deal with him. That'd be interesting.
Sure.
So let's just take this call. Dan, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
You got a question for Mike?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Obviously, all these crashes are investigated by the NTSB. I'm actually an aerospace engineer. I do a lot of flying around the U.S. These crashes must be investigated. So if obviously, if they're using an EMP weapon, the evidence wouldn't be there. But if there is some kind of evidence, would it be that the NTSB is hiding that from the general public, or would they be in on it?
Mike, let me just preamble it and tell you, and Dan, let me tell you this. If you go to themedianews.com and our website,
right,
you can see that there's an ad, we reproduce an ad from the national, from the... chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Moore, and Benton Parton, and a number, and William Donaldson took out an ad in the New York Times, Sunday New York Times, $35,000 US. And in it, it talked about how TWA-800 was shot down by two missiles. And Moore included the fact that the National Transportation Safety Board guru had burned his notes the night before the investigation hearings. And had basically what Moore said was that the National Transportation Safety Board had lied about the real TWA and what caused the downing. So, yes, go ahead, Mike, tell us about it.
Yeah, I know many people connected with 800. Jim Sanders is a friend. Christina Borgeson, who was at CBS News, is a friend. And Kelly O'Mara, who'd been chief of staff to Congressman Mike Forbes where the plane was shot down. All of them had come across enormous information. There's been a whole list of very strange air crashes. We had Swiss Air 111 up there by you guys. We had Egypt Air 990, which is still a great story. There's so many holes in that one, I can't begin to tell you.
Yeah, Mike, I just wanted you to throw out your contact information on the Internet so people can talk about that and follow any future murders that you're going to uncover via the web.
Well, hopefully one of them won't be mine. The website is www.fromthewilderness.com. That's our newsletter. Which is available both by hard copy and over the Internet from the website. You can also, if people don't have computers and they'd like to find out about the newsletter, we have a toll-free number that will work during normal business hours starting tomorrow, which is 1-866-222-7693.
Good, good.
And there you can get information on the newsletter and our video, The Truth and Lies of 9/11. We've now sold 6,000 copies of those, and so we're just perking along here, rattling every cage we can.
Mike, do you find that the speed of action of life is going to the point where now even starting to explain 9/11 gets to be ancient history?
Well, that's what I've been saying since I started my lecture series last year. You can get so focused on events that have happened that you're missing the fact. It's like people debating Adolf Hitler's invasion of Poland while he's marching on Paris, and you miss the fact that he's marching on Paris.
Yeah.
Did you get a contract to do this book, a big advance?
Not a big advance. I got an advance and a contract. The one thing I'm comfortable about is that the publisher, a company called Feral House, is absolutely immune from any CIA interference, and I've been through that before. Nobody's going to get to this book before.
Oh, yeah, Feral House, he's a good guy, that guy. What's
yeah.
Okay, but Mike, what is the point of making a book?
Well, the point is, and what I've said in the beginning of the book, which will be out next spring, is that I want to give people a map so that regardless of how quickly events move, that if they understand the dynamics of what's driving events, they'll have a better framework to understand and deal with the very rapid changes that are taking place all over the world.
Well, we've got to take a break in a few minutes, so Mike, let's just carry on, and then we'll take our break and come back with our other guests. But before you go, where do you see this whole thing now? Where is it playing out? We started, and you sort of popped up on our radar with 9/11
mm-hmm.
and with that whole thing, and now you're moving into. What about the economic side of things? You were going to talk about that. Do you want to just go into a bit of that for a while?
Well, we've been writing about economic issues for quite some time, especially insofar as the CIA's involvement in the drug trade has been my primary area of study for 25 years, and what we found is that the U.S. economy is sustained by the laundering of $500 to $600 billion a year in criminal money through the U.S. banking system. That has a direct relationship to everything that's going on now.
But Mike, Lino LaRouche has written about that for 30 years. What do you think of his work?
Much of his data is excellent. He digs up stuff that's very hard to find. I don't agree with all of his conclusions all the time. He is a dedicated drug warrior. I, on the other hand, am completely of the opinion, totally, and I'm a former narc with LAPD, that the way to pull the plug on all this insanity right now is to decriminalize drugs. And yet he wants to go out and put all the drug traffickers in jail and keep all the people who are going to prison for nonviolent crimes going to prison for nonviolent drug crimes.
So you would like George Soros' moves?
Yeah, although I'm not a complete and total fan of George Soros. He has yet to win my full trust. He's far too wealthy. As someone said to me once about 10, 12 years ago, because I had known a short little Texan with floppy ears and a big nose named Ross Perot, somebody said to me, I have yet to meet a billionaire with my best interests at heart.
Yeah. Well, what we try and do, Mike, is we're amateur spies. We don't get contracts from anybody, and so we're not beholden to anybody, but we're trying to organize ignorance for discovery for our listeners so they get a complete, balanced approach at what's going on.
I'm a pro, but I pay myself.
Uh-huh.
The bottom line to all this, guys, is oil. The world has passed the peak of oil production. We are going to have enormous civilization changing, perhaps civilization ending events.
Do you see the price of oil skyrocketing then?
Well, it's inevitable. I've spent 6 months researching this. We have an incredible interview on the website with Professor Colin Campbell. That's a free interview, by the way, who was the world's foremost expert. And I've been researching this peak of production issue for a long time. World demand is continuing to expand at an exponential rate. But the deal is this: all the cheap and easy oil that is available to be found has been found. The oil discoveries since 1964 have been in steady decline. The world is using now 4 barrels of oil for every new barrel that it discovers. And the new barrels that are being discovered are high sulfur, they're tar sand, they're extremely expensive and problematic to produce, and those costs get passed on. The only cheap oil in the world that exists. Every other region of the world has peaked. Russia has long passed its peak of production. The U.S. passed its peak in 1973. Canada has passed its peak of production. But the only two nations, or the only region that has not passed its peak of production, guess what, is the Middle East. And 25% of all the oil on the planet is in Saudi Arabia. And 11% is in Iraq, and those are the only two countries with the production facilities who can take up slack in world demand by turning up production. And I actually have, I had this written up in From the Wilderness about 3 months ago. And about a month ago, I saw James Woolsey, the former CIA director, go on Fox and say, yeah, we can get into Iraq, and we can turn his oil production up from 1 million barrels a day to 2 or 3 million pretty quickly. And the question was, well, what if he destroys his oil fields? And Woolsey says he tried that in 91, and we're prepared to handle that right away, right now. And it's become abundantly clear that the sole motivation for the move to Iraq is to get in there to turn on oil production, which would accomplish two things. Number one, it breaks the back of OPEC. Bush can immediately drive the price down from $28-$30 a barrel to about $12 a barrel, in which case the OPEC nations go bankrupt. They can't sustain their economies, all the bills they have to pay. Russia cannot sustain itself on oil imports at exports at $12 a barrel. So he breaks OPEC and Russia completely, and also that cheap oil then becomes a subsidy, an imperial subsidy, if you will, for the U.S. North American economy for as long as it lasts, but it's running out. There were incredibly strong hopes for major oil fields in Central Asia, which is what I started writing about in 9/11, and pipeline projects are still being built. Whereas they thought at one time that there was 200 billion barrels of oil in Kazakhstan around the Caspian Sea, they have found, the oil companies have found, there's only about 20 billion barrels because instead of being one vast pool, there's only little pockets of oil.
Yeah, that's what we've heard. Listen, we've got to go to break, but Mike, thanks for coming on, and good luck with the writing of the book, and we look forward to you coming back on when the book's written and ready to go to press, and so we can all buy it. I mean, your input has been just tremendous, so we really thank you a lot, and take care, and keep your head down and change your name and have an alias that you weren't on the show tonight.
You guys are great. Stay warm, and if you see a moose, send me a picture. I've been to Canada 7 times, and I haven't seen a moose yet.
We welcome you back. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Tonight we have and are joined by Jeff Steinberg, the counterintelligence editor of the Executive Intelligence Review. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I don't know why we missed you earlier, but welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be on.
Yeah, it's great to have you. There's so much going on, Jeff. You've followed so many events over the last 10, 20 years. You're the counterintelligence editor there. You worked on Dope Inc. and Treason in America and so many different things. You're connected to Lyndon LaRouche's organization. And regardless of what anybody out there thinks of Lyndon LaRouche, the information that you guys provide is just a tremendous service. We thank you for it. Jeff, what's clicking your heels and what's ringing your bell this tonight? What do you want to talk about?
Well, things are going to change dramatically after Tuesday. The entire U.S. political situation has been more or less put on hold pending the midterm elections. The White House has been on a nonstop, frenetic mobilization to do as well as they can on Tuesday in the House and Senate elections, because this will be a big indicator of what George Bush's chances are of winning re-election. And of course, Dad lost in 1992, and there's a kind of a family obsession with the idea that they don't want to be labeled as the biggest losers in American political history in the late 20th, early 21st century.
Are they going to lose?
Well, I think that it's very hard to call. The American population thinks that the idea of a war against Iraq is bad. They think that the big issue that they're worried about is the economy. But by and large, from the top, the Democratic Party is not doing what it ought to be doing as a unloyal opposition, putting the hard issues and hard challenges on the table. So we may find that the form in which the protest against Bush takes on Tuesday is a lot of people staying home. On the other hand, you may get a big turnout in places like Florida, where, you know, the president's brother is running for re-election as governor. You could have that turn out to be the show of force, thumbs down for the Bush dynasty.
Jeff, the blacks in Florida, they're not going to be played with on the polls this time. They're going to come out to counter the fraud of two years ago, right?
Well, I think there's a very good shot at that, and if that occurs, remember that the ace in the hole for George W. Bush in Florida in 2000 was the very large number of Arab American voters who turned out overwhelmingly to vote for Bush and against Lieberman and Gore. This time around, they look at George W. Bush as the sole brother and bedmate of Ariel Sharon. They're not going to turn out and vote for Bush this time. And, you know, Jeb Bush may fall on the basis of being associated with the rotten policies of his brother in the White House. So, again, I think that it's all very unpredictable. The only thing that you can say for sure is that after Tuesday, when the polls close, the fixation on the midterm elections will end, and there'll be some new fixation. So we're going into a big change this coming next few days.
Now, Jeff, what about the economy? You guys do a lot of wonderful work on the economic side of things, and LaRouche has a lot of graphs and discussions about the Fed and Federal Reserve notes. I mean, what's going to happen here with the Fed, the Federal Reserve notes, and are they going to put it into bankruptcy reorganization? What do you see here?
Well, the U.S. economy is sinking fast. The latest figures that came out just in the last few days show a continuing collapse of jobs in the industrial manufacturing, you know, the real productive sector of the economy. The airline industry is on the verge of bankruptcy. United Airlines may not make it through the month of November without filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization. Amtrak, which is the major commuter and passenger rail line for the entire United States, is broke and bankrupt. They need billions of dollars from the federal government, or they're going to stop service. We could see the U.S. economy falling back on a situation where the only way to get from the East Coast to the West Coast and the West Coast to the East Coast is to jump in your car and drive it, or take the Greyhound bus. This is a major collapse. The stock market's in a free fall. The Fed's been pumping money in to avoid the Dow Jones collapsing to a level below 5,000 on Election Day. The housing bubble in the United States is set to explode. Brazil's bankrupt. Argentina's bankrupt. The Japanese banks are bankrupt. This is a mess beyond anything that was seen in the Depression of the 1930s. And you've got somebody in the White House who, to put it mildly, ain't exactly Franklin Roosevelt.
Well,
all things point towards a disaster immediately after Election Day.
All right. So, you know, you have been writing for many years about taking over and having a prescription for for the American economy by reissuing new banknotes and using the power of the Treasury and putting the Fed into bankruptcy reorganization and bringing the economy back to health once these guys blow the pump. How do you see things playing out, and will Big Brother's control of the media be able to stem the tide over any problems that they find?
Well, I think that we're moving in a nice direction in the sense that if you've lost 90% of your savings, if your 401k retirement fund is now being referred to as a 201j, and everything
what
is
that, what does that mean?
Under U.S. Laws, individuals can set up retirement accounts for themselves with all sorts of tax benefits. They're called 401ks, and even despite these sort of preferential laws, the fact is that anybody who had their savings and retirement money invested in the stock market is bleeding badly. So people look at the media, and if the media is saying, oh, the economy is turning around, wait till next year, things are going to be back on the right track again, and people look at their quarterly earnings statements from their retirement accounts and mutual funds and pension funds,
right,
and they see that they're practically bleeding to death, they're not going to believe the media.
Yeah, you mean, in other words, they're not going to be able to retire securely. They're going to have to worry about going out back to work.
People are now, I've got friends in their mid and late 60s who are, you know, professionals, university professors, who are saying, I cannot retire. I'm going to have to work until the day I die because everything I had for retirement has been wiped out over the last 3 years.
So while the Bush junta is trying to become wealthier than Saddam, it's the economy, stupid. Is that what's going to raise its head?
You got it 100% right. That's
well,
the issue. It's on people's minds.
Jeff, how do you and Lewis put in your economics the fact that just having TV and radio and media circulating daily, 24 hours, creates wealth? How do you measure the software wealth as opposed to the traditional industrial hardware wealth?
Well, that wealth doesn't do anything for the American people.
It keeps them watching something.
Well, that's a distraction. And at a certain point, there's a psychological flip.
You would have thought that happened a long time ago. If they keep watching, then what they do is they then have to eat less. They eat burgers and crummy food, and they get unhealthy, but they remain watching. And if you keep that software imagery going, I don't think it matters whether the hardware gets rebuilt. The wealth, the spinning of money can still ride on that.
The secret weapon is the young people. People in the age bracket of between 18 and 30 years old, because those people have a long life to live ahead of them. They're not the baby boomers. They're not the World War II generation, and as far as they're concerned, they've been given the short end of the stick. They don't have a future.
Bob, I guess what we're saying is that you can try and keep people deceived for quite a while using Big Brother's technology and high-tech machines, but at some point, if he has to start buying hot dogs instead of steaks, he's going to start to get worried.
And I say that doesn't matter. I say that as long as the media keeps going, then the people are surplus flesh. That's what the people should rebel against. They have to demand the shutting off the media first before any correction of the economy.
See, what's happening is the rebellion is already occurring, and because
it won't matter, Jeff. The rebellion will just be more fodder for media. As long as the media keeps presenting news and presenting information, Barbara Walters is on there, it will keep it going. Now, flesh drops off and disappears, as Arthur Corker's well spelled out, and I think that's what you miss in your analysis.
No, I think you're fixated on the baby boomers.
No, it doesn't matter what kids
finish. The
younger generation,
wait a sec, Bob.
The younger generation are not addicted to Fox and CNN and Barbara Walters and 60 Minutes and all of that. They don't watch the news on TV because they are becoming increasingly more and more concerned that they ain't got a future, and they're in their teens and 20s, and they got a long life ahead of them, and there is a very bleak prospect. If you go to them, as LaRouche is now doing, and say, you have been robbed, and you're going to have to do something about it, you've been sent to college, you're spending $20,000 a year to get a college education that's a hoax, and you're, you know, coming out with enormous amounts of debt unlike anything that we ever experienced in the boomer generation, and there's no jobs out there. This is a generation that has no future, and LaRouche is making an appeal to them, and the response is electric. This is the factor under the radar screen in American political life that is going to change everything and turn it upside down.
Well, we've got to go to break, but it sounds like when we get back, we should talk about, Jeff, this stuff as sort of an American samizdat.
Yep.
And whether or not there's a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes that's going to have tremendous influence.
He's not going to talk about it because it undermines their power.
Yeah, Big Brother doesn't want you to know about it. Okay. We're back at Cloak and Dagger. We're behind the scenes backstage on the Global Theater, and we've got callers, Mark, Bill, George, hang on, we're going to get to all of you. Jeff Steinberg, counterintelligence editor from the Executive Intelligence Review, is on the line. We're taking your calls at 870-6400, and you can, this is a live internet and radio show, mojoradio.com. You can follow on the internet. Let's take a call from Mark in Toronto, who wants to talk about the downturn in the U.S. economy. You have a call for a question, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, I noticed that the car and truck sales for the U.S. market, the report I guess came out yesterday, that the sales are down 30% for the month of October, and yet nothing has changed. The incentives are still there and as they were, but they're down significantly from the year before. And that seems to be a true indicator of the economy. Now, based on that, and we know that a war would boost the economy. Why do you think the Bushes would let the economy sit or go downhill for 5 or 6 months before it would start? It seems to me they would get things rolling probably within about 3 months.
This problem is that they're clueless. They have no idea what needs to be done to get the economy turned around. The problem that we're dealing with is not just simply a local problem with the U.S. or a cyclical problem like even the Depression in the 1930s. We're dealing with a systemic blowout. For the last 30 years, after we collapsed the Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates and curbs on speculation, the speculative side of the economy has gone wild, and we are now facing a systemic bankruptcy. Nothing short of a bankruptcy reorganization of the global financial and monetary system is going to do the job. We've got like $500 trillion in debt that's unpayable. Brazil, bankrupt. Argentina has been in a free fall for the last year. Japan, every major commercial bank in Japan, second largest banking system in the world, is technically bankrupt if you even use the corrupt standards that we have here in the United States. So
Jeff, you don't think they're going to be able to do a controlled disintegration, as Carol White said in that wonderful book about New Dark Ages conspiracy, flip it from the U.S. dollar into the European currency?
We've done all that, and none of it's worked. You've got simultaneous bank crises in the United States, Germany, and Japan. That makes up about two-thirds of the entire global banking system, and technically speaking, the banking systems in the U.S., Germany, and Japan are bankrupt and have to be put through bankrupt reorganization.
Okay.
So it's a bigger problem. It's way, way beyond the IQ of George Bush and all of his top economic advisors put together. Add all their IQs up, and it falls way, way below what's going to be required in terms of thinking power to get us out of this mess.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for your call. And we're going to go to Bill in Toronto, and he has a question about the weakening of the U.S. economy also related to something. What have you got there, Bill?
Yeah, I guess you kind of mentioned that. Weakening of U.S. economy in order to strengthen the EU or the European economy. I was wondering whether that's going to be a continuing trend, if anything.
Well, you know, the European Union is not in very good shape either. Germany, Commerzbank, which is one of the three or four largest banks in Germany, is about to go down the tubes. You've got rates of unemployment in Europe that are catastrophic. And so we've got a situation in which it's not as if the U.S. is falling and Europe is gaining, or Japan is profiting off of the weakening of the dollar. The entire world economy is in a state of decline. We're producing less. There are fewer people actually working in the manufacturing and agricultural sector worldwide to produce the level of goods that are actually required to fuel the economy. There are people, fortunately, in Asia and in parts of Europe who are thinking about launching some large-scale development projects that have been long, long overdue, projects that LaRouche has been promoting for decades, and now we're starting to see some real progress. You've got this rail connection between North and South Korea to link up to the Trans-Siberian Railroad and other rail lines running from China down into India and into Iran. To think in terms of getting out of a depression like the one that we are already in, you've got to have the mindset at minimum of a Franklin Roosevelt, who thought in terms of launching projects that may take 25 to 30 years to fully realize, but which will result in turning around a process of collapse and turning it into a process of real economic development.
Right.
LaRouche is the person who's walking around today talking about those ideas and very few others.
Good. Bill, thanks for your call. Jeff, while we've got you on the phone, I want to flip from the economic. We're going to get to our other callers in a minute, Colt and George. But so much is going on, Jeff, and I just want to just bring us back to the butler and the in England, Diana's butler. You're the expert on the Lady Diana assassination. What's happening with the assassination? We know that the last thing was that it's a hit-and-run accident that's never been solved and has been covered up. Anything in this whole thing with the Queen and the butler that can shed some light on the Diana assassination?
Well, you know, this is one of those rare cases where the butler didn't do it. The Queen did it. She's now been caught openly lying. The British government spent like £1.6 million on prosecuting this poor guy, and it turns out that it's all based on lies, and the Queen may find herself subject to interrogation. The idea of the monarchy being above the law and being given perpetual immunity is maybe now coming to an end. Now,
that's absolutely amazing, isn't it?
It is, and what's more, the real burning issue, if the monarchy is going to be forced, Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip, and others, to fess up, the big crime that they hold the secret to is not the theft of some of Diana's personal property. The real issue is the circumstances of her death. Was it an execution? Was this ordered by the royals? What was the role of the French government in facilitating the murder of a future Queen Mother of England?
Do you think that we could now bring the investigation to the next stage as a result of what may transpire out of this butler whole situation?
I certainly think that there's a possibility that that's what we're going to see happening now.
Any chance of you going over and having another go at the British Empire over there, Jeff, like you did the last time?
Well, you know, about 2 weeks ago I was interviewed on a show that's going to be aired, I believe, late this month in the United States. It's called The Belzer Connection, and it's Richard Belzer. He's a very well-known actor. He's one of the stars of Law and Order, and he's now got a TV show in the United States, an hour-long show that's going to air either on the Sci-Fi Channel or on USA, going through all of these major conspiracies over the recent decades. And the pilot show was a debate between myself and one of the leading apologists for Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, and I'm very excited. The show went extremely well, and at the end of it, Belzer said, "Hey, I'm convinced this was a conspiracy."
Where do you see it picking itself up, Jeff? Do you see the magistrate, Hervé Stéphane, opening it up again? Where would this thing lead to?
Well, I think Stéphane could wind up himself going to jail for leading a cover-up. It's turning out that Judge Stéphane came under enormous pressure and frankly folded his tent and became a willing participant in the cover-up. And now evidence of that is out in France, and now we've got the Queen being potentially subject to the same kind of judicial process that every other citizen of the United Kingdom is subject to. If that happens, I want to be there in the galley when she gets interrogated and when we call her husband to testify. I want to hear what he really has to say about his knowledge before the fact.
Give us some idea of what we can expect in the next few weeks. What's happened with the election, etc.
Well, I think we don't know what the outcome of the election is going to be, but we do know that the complete fixation of the last period of months on the outcome of the midterm election is going to be over, and at that point, the presidential campaign for 2004 is going to begin. The American people don't want the Iraq war. They're worried about the economic collapse process. Bush is, at this point at least, surrounded by advisors who are unqualified, incapable, and uninterested in dealing with the issues that the American people want to deal with. The Democratic Party, with the exception of the LaRouche faction in there, is behaving like a bunch of bozos. And so it's a wildly unpredictable and extremely volatile period. Things are going to change very dramatically in America after Tuesday, and I think the best thing I can say is hold your seat, and our toll-free number.
Yes, give that on your website.
I urge people to call to get copies of some of our recent material, to get the website address, and all of those good things, is toll-free, 888-347-3258. If you've got a brain, if you're worried about the war danger, if you're worried about the depression, if you want to know what's going on south of the border in La La Land in Washington, then you've got to call that toll-free number and be in contact with us.
Terrific.
Not just simply get a copy of something in the mail, but be in contact, get involved, and it's 888-347-3258.
I'm going to put that up on the webpage so people can get that.
We're going to have your links. We've got your links and all that up on the website, but it's good to repeat it.
Talk to live human beings on the other end of the phone like we're doing tonight. There's nothing like it.
Please pass on our regards to Lyndon LaRouche. She's doing a wonderful job.
Oh, he does his best. He's busy as hell, but he's...
Tell him after the election. Tell him after the election in December, we're expecting him to come on and do a full-fledged dialogue with us.
I can promise it.
Thanks a lot, Jeff, and we'll
speak
to you soon. Good night. Okay, Bob, are you in there?
Yeah, I guess you couldn't have me on earlier when you had the other callers.
No, we could. We've got a question here from Colt for you, Bob.
Well, go ahead, but why wasn't I given a chance to get back at Jeff? The guy's totally naive. I have to warn him, but he's gone. It's too late.
Too late. Well, you'll get to it. You've been pouting over the last while. Let's get on to Colt. Colt, are you there? You got a question for Bob?
Yeah, hey, Bob. It's Colt again from last week.
Okay.
Remember last week when you were trying to convince me about this whole nation thing?
Oh, you're cutting out there, Colt. Are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm on a crappy...
The whole lot, just repeat it.
All right, sorry. Remember when you were talking to me about that whole Matrix thing, right? You were trying to convince me about the whole thing. Are you still there?
Yep.
All right, and tonight I thought I heard you say something about to Mike, was it, about how the Matrix is gone.
Yes.
So how did it change within a week?
Well, because I don't get a chance to talk for 5 hours.
Oh.
All right, you listen to my excerpts for all the 16, 17 shows. It's an ongoing disposition, exposition of what's going on, and you're just hearing fragments, but that's the effect of this medium.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, when Jeff is talking about young kids are turning off the major media and looking for a new way to use their brain or whatever, what Jeff misses, what LaRouche misses, is that the media goes on its own. And it will go on, and the media will continue. Now, that's the Matrix. Now, what's interesting is that the media has so shrunk that people feel outside of it now. So they're wandering around trying to figure out how to connect. And that is the problem. We have to get the young people to understand that the thing they're trying to connect to is not connectable. And so in that sense, the Matrix is dead. The people see it, but they don't know how to implement it or how to react to that. So
So, yes, the Matrix is dead in our perception because the Matrix shrunk, but the Matrix is still going on in its own momentum. And that's what keeps the economy going, because the economy is designed for the Matrix, not human beings. And this is what LaRouche doesn't understand. He's trying to build old hardware projects. It's ridiculous. So this is what the kids need to go. So don't call LaRouche. Call us. I will lay out what the kids need to do to understand what they're up against, even though they're not listening to the media.
Thanks very much, Colt. Look forward to your call next week.
I'd like
okay,
to,
we got
yeah. Supplement to that, that Jeff seemed a little off saying that the kids today aren't as addicted to the media right now. They do have a different experience with the media than the people from the baby boom generation, but they're really involved with it. They are drugged by it heavily through video games, Game Boy,
through their own media, Sleeper, through their own decentralized media. There's lots of niche marketing going on. The kids have their own media. They make new magazines. They make new videos. They have a fad for 2 months, and then they move on.
Oh.
They're not following the mainstream media.
Okay, Bob. George from Toronto on the Internet Service Providers. Go ahead, George.
Well, hi there. Our federal government is coming up to get in line with an international treaty that's going to allow the police to get into Internet service providers. They're going to store all data, all the websites you visit, all your wireless communications, and that has to be available to fight terrorism, so we hear. The Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police wants to have a national database of all Internet users. This was in the Toronto Star Business section on the 29th of October. And I think if our government is so keen to know where we go and what we do, we should help them. Somebody must have packages and packages and reams of old books, newspapers, magazines, or whatever. Send them to your MP. It's all free postage, care of the House of Commons, K1A0A6. Email your Member of Parliament and the Prime Minister with all the useless garbage you can find.
Yes.
Let them know what you're reading so that we fight back and keep some of our rights and freedoms, because the only thing we have to fight with is the Internet that's free from media manipulation. And if we lose it, then we've pretty much lost the battle.
Yeah,
right.
One of the news stories we have on the website, of course, is about how they're going to be changing the Internet and reducing our freedoms and rights.
In that sense, Lenny, the Internet is over. That's what I mean. It's over. They're now going to legislate. Legislation comes in as a rearview mirror action. But George is right. As long as the Internet is here as a guaranteed environment, now useless for humans, then be a manipian, be a satirist. Just flood it with crap. Because it's irrelevant. In that sense, I'm being consistent to George, the Matrix has shrunk. But where are we now as human beings when the technology goes on its own life, its own adventure, ignoring us? That's what we got to deal with.
Okay, terrific, George. Thanks for your call. Okay, let's open it up between you, I, and Sleeper. Bob, where are we? Go ahead, Sleeper.
I want to throw something
yeah.
at Bob, going back to Mike Rupert. What is happening to Mother Earth with all the fossil record being burnt up? He's talking about oil reserves running out. What else is being affected on another levels than the economy and the machine?
Well, everything is destroyed. Everything has disappeared. We have nothing to measure, but we do have something that's still here. It's our consciousness, the mystery body. The mystery thing is sitting here looking and noticing all this stuff. Our language is gone. The language has been used to. But we can push for breakthroughs like coal fusion. If we bring in coal fusion energy, which the Japanese know is really amazing stuff, if we just talk about those issues while telling the media to shut up and we're not going to ignore them while we flood them with information, we work on all these fronts together, create the chaos, create the confusion with the point that new energies are here available, new medicines that Helki Fairies pointed out. That's what you got to keep your eye on. There's ways to survive this and be extremely healthy. Just don't buy the normal crap.
All right. Well, Bob, for our listeners, next week we're going to ask the question, we're going to talk next week about all the master spies that are on television, CNN. We're going to fit in the secret society and who the representative is. So Wolf Blitzer, who does he represent? Likewise, on our local channel here, Bob, TV Ontario, we're going to ask our listeners to look at this TV Ontario show with Wolf and Margolis and Richard Gwynn. Who's the Zionist? Who's the Bolshevik? Who's the Freemason? And we're going to identify next week the spies and from which agency they're from. That'll be exciting, Bob.
Yes, and don't forget, my prediction is no Iraq until the summer, spring, summer. I disagree with Mike. I disagree with Skolnick, all of them. But that's just my position. Let them have their view. We'll see who it works out.
Okay, well, next week, of course, we're going to talk about the spies on TV and from what secret society they're from. And the last word, I think, goes to Bob. Go ahead, Bob. Give us the last word on the week.
The Bureau of
Broadcast measurement, BBM is the AM with the BB representing 22. There's something we can develop later.
Okay, that's the Android meme, the Bureau of Broadcast Measurement, Sleeper. Good night. Thanks very much. Thanks to Nick, our engineer, Loretta, and everybody else. Thanks for listening. Talk Radio for Spies will return next week, same time, same channel, same station. And don't get fooled by Big Brother this week.
And the world will only last 3.5 weeks.